Yeah, football weather here. It feels a little bit right that we're not having to play football when it's like 90 degrees out here in Knoxville. That always bothers me in August and early September.
Yeah, this is a nice little like change of pace there.
Now, well, you know, I don't know if I want it to be a every year thing because it's, man, I don't know. Maybe as long as the NFL is still going on and maybe I still would need NBA basketball going on to make me not miss college football as much because it's bridged the gap pretty well for me so far. But I'm ready for it to get started on Saturday. We'll dive into that throughout the day. But I guess the story of the day has to be last night in the bubble. Game four.
Yeah.
Tyler Hero was a hero. Tyler Hero, baby goat, drops 37 points off the bench, putting himself among some elite company with Magic Johnson, Derrick Rose, and Brandon Jennings. Maybe like don't focus, Jennings, on the, yeah. Don't focus on the Brandon Jennings part. Maybe don't worry about the Brandon Jennings part. Focus on the Magic Johnson, Derrick Rose. But Tyler Hero was the best player on the court last night, and that seemed pretty crazy to me.
Yeah, man. He was unreal. And like you said, he's in good company. He also was just setting records left and right for, you know, youngest player to do this, first rookie to do that.
There was a couple of things that had to hurt. Like, one you realize, like, man, A, it hurt me because being 30-year-old watching that, I was like, man, this guy came and buy alcohol legally, and he's out here doing this. And then I thought about Boston. I was like, man, they have to be really sick that a white guy's doing this to them. I'm ready to go all in that Tyler Hero is the best white American basketball player since Larry Bird. White American basketball player, Tyler Hero, is now up there with Larry Bird, and it has to make Boston fans sick. Because yeah. Bird didn't drop 37 at the age of 20. Notice Larry Bird's name was not on that list. Magic Johnson's was. Larry Bird's was not. If I tell you that Tyler Hero is the best white American basketball player, or going to be, since Larry Bird, you say what? You try to make some argument for Kevin Love?
I try and think of other players. And
miss me with the Kevin Love talk.
Jason Kidd?
Jason Kidd's black.
It's fair. Yeah.
Like, you might not think of Jason Kidd as black, but Jason Kidd's black whenever he needs to be. I thought he was white most of my life, and then I found out he was not white.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, I still want to claim him, but can't. There's no question that Tyler Hero's white. I mean, Tyler Hero's got swag. As Dwayne Wade tweeted out, Tyler Hero had a best black friend growing up. That's probably true. Tyler Hero's best friend's probably black. That's probably true. That's
probably who got him in the basketball.
Tyler Hero does that little thing whenever you interview him. Like, he's making the voice a little bit deeper than it's supposed to be. He's talking with a little bit of a voice inflection. Where you're like, okay, that's not your normal voice. But you know what? It might be. I'm not going to try you.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody else.
J.J. Redick. Tyler Hero's already better than J.J. Redick.
Steve Nash.
He's Canadian.
Yeah, he's cool.
I said American.
Yeah, he is Canadian.
Big L for you, Draven.
Yeah.
You don't think I thought of Steve Nash? You don't think I protected myself? I didn't come in here and say best white player. I said best white American. So miss me with Luka. Miss me with Dirk.
I knew those at least.
It's Tyler Hero. Kevin Love's the only one that has a claim, and Tyler Hero's going to be better than Kevin Love. That's it. It's Tyler Hero. Didn't think that was going to happen after he had, you know, gotten shut down by Tennessee a couple years ago.
Yeah. what a glow up.
I still remember him calling himself a walking bucket before shooting the ball off the top of the backboard on a big possession against Tennessee. I remember laughing when he got drafted. And he comes out there in that stupid suit. And then, like, yeah, no one's laughing now. Like, I mean, he's just a baller. And as we sit here, something I've been arguing, something I've been keeping an eye on just with my Memphis fans, my fans that like the Grizzlies, the Pelican fans, you know, been arguing about who has the best young core, best young duo. I'm like, hey, Trey and John Collins. They're like, no, it's John Morant, it's Triple J, it's Ingram and Zion. You're like, nope, actually, it's Bam and Hero.
It may be.
It's actually Bam and Hero. That's the best young duo in the league, and of course, the Miami Heat are going to have them locked all the way down. Tweeter writes in, Winning Stripe says, Gordon Hayward, he dropped 40 in a playoff game. Gordon Hayward's a pretty good nomination. Maybe if Gordon Hayward didn't completely destroy his ankle, because, I mean, he's just a guy now.
just the guy.
Like, he's just out there now. Like, it's sad because, like, when they signed him, like, he was coming off of an all-star season in Utah. Like, he was supposed to come in and be, like, their best player. First game, you know, 3 minutes into the game, whatever, he tries to go for that alley-oop and completely shatters his ankle. But maybe you're right. Maybe Hayward had enough of a career where he is currently the best white basketball player since Larry Bird.
It's about the only guy I can think of at the moment.
Good submission. Now, Gordon Hayward's career, like I said, I think has been kind of derailed.
Yeah.
So he won't reach the...
They're on opposite paths right now.
Yeah, he won't reach the career that he probably should have. But like I said, he had one all-star season. When you say he only had one all-star season, like, that's not going to be tough to beat, right?
Yeah. No, I think Harrell will make an all-star game.
I mean, that's the bar, right? Like, I mean, he'll make an all-star game.
How many did Kevin Love make, Dean?
Kevin Love, I mean, he had to make it in the East when he was in there with the when he was in there with the Cavs. I don't know if he made any in the West. He is a five-time all-star.
Okay.
Two-time All-NBA. So I'll say that I'll give Kevin Love the nod over Gordon Hayward. Of course, Kevin Love has a ring.
Mm-hmm.
Has an iconic moment where he guarded Steph Curry. Whereas Gordon Hayward maxed out, I believe, at 21 points a game. Kevin Love has a season with 26. I guess Gordon basically got to 22. It was 21.9. Kevin Love got to 26 points a game.
Wasn't he averaging
a couple times?
Double-digit rebounds that season, too?
I'm sure he did because he used to. He's right at it. I guess. Okay. Or no, yeah, no, he was. Yeah. 1 year he led the league in rebounding at 15 points a game. And then, like, yeah, when he had 26, he was doing 13, 12 and a half.
He used to be a monster on the boards.
Yeah, now some of those were empty stats on losing teams.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he got to Cleveland, his numbers went down, but he was on winning teams. Like, it was a good trade. That's another thing. It's like Hero's doing this, like, on a winning team in a big moment. Like, Kevin Love didn't make the playoffs for, like, the first five, you know, what, 7 years of his career.
Yeah.
And I would be willing to bet that through the first 7 years of his career in Minnesota, he didn't even have a winning record in Minnesota. You got to be willing to bet they were under 500 every year. Because I want to say the only time Minnesota in their history has finished above 500 is when KG's been on the team or the year they had Jimmy Butler and he drug them to the 8th seed.
Jeez.
I think every other year in their history they have been under 500. So Kevin Love's the clubhouse leader right now. But like I said, he didn't drop 37 in a conference finals game.
Yeah,
at least not at 20 years old. Yeah.
What about John Stockton?
Good one. Do you like Google best white basketball players?
Yeah.
I mean, John Stockton's probably on there. I mean, John Stockton, probably better than Kevin Love. Good job by you, Hayden. And that list, whoever they put it together. Do they have Bird at one?
This just says white basketball players, and I just kind of extrapolated the Americans.
So you just went ahead and you crossed off all the foreigners.
It went Larry, Dirk, and then John Stockton.
Yeah.
So and then Steve Nash.
Yeah. Okay. John Stockton, Hall of Famer.
That's a good one.
It says Steve Nash was born in South Africa. Is that true?
I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's Canadian, but I mean.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Stockton, 11-time All-NBA, Hall of Fame. Yeah, he's the best white American basketball player besides Larry Bird. Now, when I say since Larry Bird, I guess Stockton was in the 90s. So, yeah, that works. Tyler Hero trying to come for that throne. Although getting 11 All-NBA is going to be tough in this era. Maybe I should say the best since Stockton. Damn it. Doesn't work as well when it's best since Stockton since they're playing the Celtics.
Yeah.
Because I know Murph and O'Leary are watching that game and they're so mad that they didn't draft Tyler Hero because they were close. I think they picked two spots behind where the Heat got Hero. They had it circled. They wanted him. Just clutch shot after clutch shot last night, and when it mattered, he was making plays. That little step back he had over.
Oh, man.
First team, all defense, Marcus Smart just put it right in his face. Which, if you want to look and see, you know, there are certain stats that people use to try to, like, tell stories on games. If you want to, like, just have one game, if you ever find yourself in an argument, and if you listen to sports radio, you probably like to argue with your friends, right? You probably like the discourse around sports. You like to argue with your friends. So, you know, every now and then if you're arguing basketball, the plus-minus stat might come up. If you ever need something to shut that up, Solomon Hill, who checked in for 4 minutes last night and got made fun of just for because he looked homeless.
Yeah,
everyone's like, this guy looks like he did not expect to have to play the game. He would have got a haircut, maybe. He was a plus two in the game last night. Tyler Hero, who had 37 points, was a minus four. So they were 4 points worse with Tyler Hero on the court. 6 points worse than they were with Solomon Hill on the court. So if you ever need a game to kind of dispel the whole narrative of plus minus, look no further than last night, Game 4, Eastern Conference Finals, where the best player on the court, Tyler Hero, was a minus four.
That's crazy how that works.
I mean, if you just play a long part of the game, yeah. Like, I mean, it just, you gets tight.
Yeah.
You come in for 4 minutes, your team outscores you by two, you're good. You check out the rest of the game, you're good. You've done your job. Solomon Hill, plus two. They win by three. He was a big part of it. His minutes were huge.
Shout out Solomon Hill.
Shout out to Solomon Hill. But Hero was awesome. And the Celtics are now on the brink. And like I said, it has to hurt even worse because it's a white guy doing it to him. And it's that white guy doing it to him. And it's not even like the Heat were good from three last night. They shot 27%.
Mm-hmm.
10 of 37.
I don't think Duncan Robinson even hit one.
He did not. He went 0 for 4 from 3, 0 for 5 from the field. He couldn't stay out of foul trouble again. He had three free throws, though. But outside of that, it was pretty much just Hero, Bam, Butler, and Dragic. That was it. That's the hurt if you're a Celtics fan. We'll continue the conversation after the break. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. We got we had a little fake news. Tweeter wrote in that Arvydas Sabonis was born in Portland. I was like, that doesn't seem right to me. He played in Portland, but no, he wasn't born in Portland. He was at least according to his Wikipedia page, he was born in the Soviet Union. And I knew he played over there, like, you know, for the first prime. I mean, he didn't come over to America until 30. When he came to America, he played in Portland. And they always say he was a bad boy. Like they always say, like, if he would have been in America, like, at the beginning of his career, like, he might have been the, you know, like, just a legend. The way he, like, would have revolutionized. Maybe, like, if he was in America during his prime, they say, like, the big man evolution would have happened before because that's how good he was. Said he played like a modern-day big. The Celtics on the brink of elimination. Mm-hmm. The Heat. And what else can you say? You had four guys doing all the lifting. I mean, you look at that team, you had Bam with 20. You had Butler with 24. You had Dragic with 22, Hero with 37. Everyone else on the team that played, Crowder, Robinson, Hill, and Iguodala, combined for 9 points. They made two shots. Those other three guys, I mean, Hill didn't shoot. Those other three guys that played significant minutes, Crowder, Robinson, Iguodala, they combined to go 2 of 18 from the field. It was four guys doing all the heavy lifting. What do you do if you're a Boston fan? Like, are you mad today? Like, do you still feel like you're the better team? Because everyone keeps saying they're the better team. Like, even this entire series, it's been this way for the last two rounds. The Heat are underdogs every game.
Yeah.
Except Game 4 and Game 5 against Milwaukee after Giannis went out, they were the favorites. But they were underdogs after they beat the Bucks down in Game 1. Mm-hmm. They beat them in Game 2. They beat them in Game 3, which I guess after Game 3, they were. That's when Giannis went out. But they were the underdogs all three of those games. They've been the underdogs in all four of these games so far against the Heat, against the Celtics. Even Round 1 against the Pacers, that spread just stayed at 4.5 as they kept covering every single game. I want to say they're 11-2 against the spread.
Makes sense.
So far in the playoffs,
I think they've been 3.5-point underdogs every game this series.
And listing up for Game 5 right now, they're 2.5-point underdogs. At least that's where I saw it open on my bookie. Use the promo code Knoxville. So, like, I mean, everyone keeps saying Boston's a better team, but, like, they keep losing. And, again, it's not like the Heat are playing their style of basketball. There was a world you could see the Heat just coming out and hitting a bunch of threes and making a run in the playoffs. Like, they have good three-point shooting. But like I said, they aren't even hot from three. They are just playing tougher than all of their opponents.
They're just outplaying the Celtics right now.
There was a couple stretches last night where, like, the Heat would go up and get, like, three or four rebounds, offensive rebounds on one possession, which seems crazy because, like, when you look at the total stats, they only had 10 for the entire game, but I swear they had two possessions where they got, like, eight of those. they just seem tougher than Boston. They seem like they want it more, and they seem like they have guys that are ready for it, which is weird because you think of them, at least at their core, as a young team. Like, I get Butler and Dragic and Iguodala aren't young. Those guys are old. Apparently, Iguodala is on the brink of playing in 6 straight NBA finals, which seems kind of crazy. Jeez.
That is crazy.
Iguodala about to make his 6 straight finals. Now, granted, like 5 of them were with the Warriors, but then he went to the Heat, obviously, and they're right here, 1 step away. So, like, they got some championship medal, but Jimmy Butler, before this year, had never even made a conference final. So, it's not like they had a team full of guys that just, like, knew how to win in the playoffs. Yeah. Butler had never been to the conference finals. Dragic maybe had been once. I think he was on that Suns team in 2010 that lost to the Lakers. He had been once. Everyone else, young. You've seen the youngness, like, bother Duncan Robinson. Like, he was a key member of the Heat, and now he's barely playable.
Yeah.
Like, he's got there basically as a distraction. Like, you run around screens, you make people tired. Outside of that, you are going to be pretty useless. And like I said, Hero, rookie, Bam, year 2 of Bam, right?
I think so, yeah.
Year 2 of Bam?
Yep.
Those guys never really experienced a moment like this, and they're out here performing. Meanwhile, the Celtics, I mean, they might be young too. Like, Tatum and Brown are young, but, like, they have made a couple conference finals, right? I mean, they lost to LeBron 2 years ago in the conference finals. Yep. They made the second round of the playoffs last year. Like, they have a little bit more playoff experience than their age shows. Kemba, older, but again, you look at Kemba, that's a guy that's never had any playoff success, and, you know, the first couple games of the series, he played like it. Last night, the moment looked too big for Tatum in the first half. He was awful in the first half. He really put the Heat ahead. He put the Celtics in a hole.
Yep.
Now, I will say he was awesome in the second half. Like, Tatum, he avoided a lot of slander just on the way he came out and responded, really from, like, the middle of the third quarter on. Like, he dropped 28 points pretty easily from the third quarter on, but in a 4-point game, he still had a bad turnover, or a 5-point game maybe. He still had a bad turnover.
6 turnovers on the game.
6 turnovers on the game. They couldn't get any stops. It was kind of him that lost Hero on the – it was already kind of over. It was a 9-point game when he gave up a backdoor cut to Hero.
Mm-hmm. He fell asleep on that one.
Yeah, fell asleep, like, with the game on the line. But like I said, it was already kind of over at that point. Marcus Smart has been really good for them in the playoffs, but last night he kind of went back to Marcus Smart that can't shoot. Like, Marcus Smart, I'm okay with him shooting 8 threes if he's hitting 4 of them, because, like, if he hits a couple, like, usually he'll – get going and have these weird shooting nights, at least in the playoffs he has. But last night, 1 for 8. 3 of 12 from the field. Maybe stop shooting, bro.
Yeah. Because he was getting assists. Like, he was making stuff happen. But, yeah, then he was just throwing up shots.
Well, like, that might be, like, I mean, like, what Spoelstra's doing in terms of making Smart the playmaker. I mean, like, yeah, like, I'm okay if Marcus Smart is leading the team in assists. Like, he's not typically, usually, like, their go-to playmaker. He had 11 assists last night, so that means if he had 11 assists and 12 shots, he had the ball in his hand a lot.
And I think that's what you ideally want.
And if I'm the Heat, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
And, like, if I'm the Celtics, I don't want that. But, hell, the way Tatum played in the first half, Smart maybe kept him afloat with his assists.
Yeah. No, yeah, if I want either, like, Tatum, Kemba, or Jaylen Brown with the ball most of the time, I would definitely take Marcus Smart over any of them,
sure.
I think.
So the Celtics find themselves on the brink of elimination, and I do just wonder, do people still think they're the better team? Because that's always been the narrative, though. This is the better team. This is the deeper team. And maybe they are deeper at this point. I guess they're playing deeper because you see, like, last night, the Heat could pretty much only play 7 guys.
Yeah.
Maybe that extra day of rest, those extra 2 days of rest because of Monday Night Football helped the Heat because Dragic looked better. Mm-hmm. Even though he was 8 for 21, he had a couple big shots, made a couple big plays. Iguodala was able to give you 27 minutes and at least move around out there defensively.
He had 3 steals.
Was able out there to just be out there to give another body where you don't have to play Kelly Olynyk, where you don't have to play Kendrick Nunn. Weird to me that the Celtics, like, I don't know if Brad Stevens is, like, having a bad performance, but it did seem weird that they insist on continuing to go without Grant in stretches, like Semi Ojeleye playing more minutes. It did seem like Grant could give them some good things when he was out there. And I know he's had some problems fouling. Some of those are just bad calls because he's a rookie and the rookies don't get the benefit of the doubt. But, like, I've been surprised to see him not get more minutes because it does seem like he could be effective bothering Abadayo while also, like, stretching the floor a little bit. because he has been hot from three.
Yeah, for the most part, he's been up to the moment when they've had him in there.
Yeah.
So it does surprise me.
You would have thought he would have earned some trust after the Game 7 performance against the Raptors.
Yeah.
And last night he got 1 minute. That seemed a little surprising to me. Although Robert Williams has looked pretty good when they put him in as a big man, although he gets a little lost sometimes on defense. But his energy and his size has created some spark sometimes for the Celtics. Any chance they get the Celtics get back in the series? Like, I mean, is this isn't getting to seven, right? This is over by Sunday, right?
I would think so.
Game five will be on Friday. Game six will be on Sunday. Like, it's going to be over by Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't get a game seven out of this series. I'd be surprised at this point. Am I crazy for saying that Hero and Bam are the best young duo in the league? Am I being a prisoner of the moment?
I don't think it's like an extremely hot take or anything. I mean,
I would say Luka and Porzingis, if Porzingis can stay healthy.
Okay. That's fair. Because, I mean, like, I will say, like, of this young core of Bam and Hero, I don't think either one of those guys will ever be a superstar.
No.
Yeah.
But, like, all-stars, I think both of them are all-stars moving forward. Like, that's the thing about this Heat team. They got those two good young pieces, and they got a popular destination for free agents. Like, you can convince any mid-20-year-old star in his prime, hey, you want to come live on South Beach?
Not to mention Pat Riley as well.
Pat Riley. I mean, I don't know how many more years Pat Riley has. You know, he's getting there in age, but, like, Pat Riley is always given credit for being, like, the kind of, like, the godfather of the NBA. Mm-hmm. I mean, Pat Riley has been relevant in the NBA since the 70s. Like, he has been a part of a championship team, or at least a team that's been playing for championships since the 70s, right? Like, as a player with the Lakers, the Knicks, the Heat, and then as the president of operations with the Heat, I mean, they've gotten back twice with LeBron and this team now. 06, he was coaching them when they won a championship. So, like, Riley is the godfather of the NBA, so, like, he can make a pretty good pitch, and also, like, hey, Hero and Bam are going to be young and cheap for the next couple years. So come here and sign, and then we'll be able to re-sign these guys, and we can build a really, really good young team that the parts fit, and we have a good culture. You always hear about this Heat culture team.
Added perk, you throw on no income tax.
Added perk, you throw in no income tax. And, oh, by the way, South Beach.
Yeah.
South Beach. And this Heat team is fun to root for now. I could easily see them becoming pretty hateable in a couple years, and they're just, like, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But enjoying the ride now. I think before the playoffs, you would have thought that, like, if they would have had to go, like, make a big trade for Giannis, Jimmy's always flirting with Embiid. Like, would you include Bam in those trades? Would you include Hero in those trades? Like, it's so funny to look. It's so funny. One of the worst takes, I don't know if it was at the time, although I would have said at the time, no, it's a bad take, just because of who they were talking about. But one of the funniest ones that always circulates is Skip Bayless from the offseason saying, trade Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo for Russell Westbrook, and then you'll have a chance.
Oh, jeez.
And he was like, man, can you imagine how quickly Pat Riley would hang up right now if the Rockets call him like, hey, we'll send you Russell Westbrook. Will you send us Hero and Bam? Can you imagine the absurdity of someone calling and offering that? Like, when you look at the price tag, and you look at the age, when you look at their skills, because both those guys are probably better for winning basketball than Russell Westbrook is at this point in his career. Not to mention their, I would say if you add their salaries up, they'd be close to like 1/4 of the price tag.
If that.
I would say they make $10 million combined. I would say, as a first-round pick, both of them first-round picks, I'd say they're both around the $5, $6 million range, I would say. But it might be less. I don't know. Bam heading into year two. So maybe, I don't know.
Bam's heading into year three, by the way.
He's in year three or heading into year three?
Or this is his third year
right
now.
Okay.
He's in his third
year. Well, I knew he was 23, so like I knew he was a little bit older. Yeah. I didn't know. Okay. That makes a little bit more sense to how quickly he has gotten.
Because I feel like his first year he didn't really – I think he was more like a G League player. I don't even think he played much.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was.
Yeah.
And then last year is when he took over for Whiteside and kind of put him on the bench. Okay. That checks out. But I'm laughing at the idea of calling to offer Russell Westbrook for Bam and Hero. But that's what Skip Bayless said the Heat should do.
They both are making – Hero's making 3.6, Bam's making 3.4 this year.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, much less than a fourth of what Russell Westbrook makes. Yeah, no, I think you want to keep those type of those pieces together. Cheap labor in any sport is the best commodity, especially in salary cap sports. When you have those cheap guys – because, I mean, keep in mind, the Heat. If you look at their salary cap situation, they are going to have a plethora of salary cap space after next year when Giannis and a couple other big stars are going to be free agents. And like I said, they will be a popular destination. They will look appealing. And now, I mean, like, if you look, I mean, at the pieces they have now, like, you could probably still put together a pretty good trade package of young pieces without having to even include Hero and Bam.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Duncan Robinson's had a bad playoffs, but Duncan Robinson's still a huge asset.
Kendrick Nunn had a second place in the Rookie of the Year standings, wasn't he?
He feels a little Michael Carter Williams-y to me, but yeah. I don't know if, like, you can...
just completely disappeared this playoffs.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I don't know how much of it is because, like, he... I feel like he had kind of disappeared towards the back half of the year, but also, like, then he got COVID and kind of fell out of the rotation, and, like, he was starting over Dragic, but you can't, like, put... You know, you got to give the miss to Dragic. Like, Dragic's balling. Dragic looks awesome, and Nunn looks terrible. So, I don't know if a team would still view him as a positive asset or not, but, like, Duncan Robinson is. Any team can use Duncan Robinson. I mean, the best commodity in, you know, in basketball is three-point shooting at this point, spacing the floor, and he can do it better than anybody. So, like, they're still going to have some pieces to put together. This Heat team is set up for the future. And it's fun to watch now, but I do kind of see it taking a turn where you eventually start hating this team.
I don't want Giannis.
You don't want Giannis?
No. He's a loser.
You can't bring a loser into a winning culture. You're exactly right about that. Now, I will say Giannis probably – I think Giannis checks the boxes of wanting to win. Like, Giannis says the right things. I think Giannis is a loser in spite of his mentality and drive. Yeah. I think Giannis is a winner. You don't improve as much as he does every offseason without being a winner. Now, I will say eventually, like, hey, dude, figure out a jump shot. Although it is kind of crazy that you have such an athletic freak and we're like, hey, this one thing you can't do, we're going to magnify, but can you get a jump shot, please? But maybe you don't want it. Maybe it becomes unfair if you get Giannis. Maybe it's better just to run with this homegrown talent. Like, I know you might not be the best person to ask Caden because you were probably, you know, a lot younger when this happened. But, I mean, you were a lot younger when this happened. But, like, I would imagine there's a lot of Heat fans that are like, this is more fun than when we had LeBron and D-Wade. This has been more enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that, like...
Well, I know, but, like, you didn't have, like, the perspective.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you were a newish Heat fan, a newish basketball fan. I mean, you would have been, like, what, 10 years old?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you didn't have, like, you didn't, like, know how sports were supposed to be. You were kind of like me at that age. I mean, mine were Tennessee teams. I didn't pick, like, a random team to bandwagon or whatever. But, like, when I grew up, the Titans were in the Super Bowl. The Vols won the national championship. Like, I grew up a fan of thinking, wow, this is easy. I mean, even, like, the Lady Vols, which I didn't really care about, but as an 8 or 9 year old, I'd be like, oh, it's cool, we're winning another championship. Like, we were winning everything. I was like, this is easy. Now I have the perspective of, like, yeah, it's not so easy. It's like, if the Titans ever get to the Super Bowl again, it's going to feel a lot better than it did when I was 9 or 10 years old.
Yep.
If the Vols ever win another national championship, I mean, it'll feel like, wow, you really put the equity in here. You have come from the bottom, right? It's not like you've just, like, had this rolling the whole time. You've come from the bottom. You've had to completely rebuild. Because the Heat had to do that a couple years ago. Like, they were in salary cap hell after paying, like, Hassan Whiteside $28 million, after giving Kelly Olynyk, like, $15 million. They gave Tyler Johnson $20 million. They gave Deion Waiters $20 million. Like, Pat Riley. The conversation about him before Jimmy Butler is like, wow, Pat Riley is out of touch. Like, what the hell is going on with Pat Riley? He has built a mediocre team in Miami. He's given all these big contracts. And then he struck gold last year and went out and made a trade and got rid of Josh Richardson and found Jimmy Butler and had a good couple drafts. And boom, now they're back and set up. I think this one would feel better than the big three. Just because, like, you brought Bosh, you brought LeBron, and it was kind of, like, quickly thrown together.
It also got off to a slow start because they lost to the Mavs their first year.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, they made the finals the first year. But, yes, I mean, the first title that they won probably still felt awesome because, like, but it was basically built off of being the villains for the full year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone laughing at you. Like, they got – there's not been very many professional teams that we have clowned the way we clowned the 2010-2011 Miami Heat when they lose to the Mavericks. Like, that was the last time I feel like, now maybe I'm missing something, but that's the last time I feel like we came together as a country to root against something. Like, you had LeBron fans, but then everyone else is like, no, we're rooting for the Mavericks. And some of it was because of, like, hey, we want to see Dirk win. Hey, the underdogs. But also, like, the way that Heat team had carried themselves, had their big press conference, not one, not two, not six, not seven. You want that team to be humbled. Like, that's the last time I feel like we've come together collectively as a country and just, like, pooped all over someone's failures. Now maybe I'm missing somebody. Like, I still get joy when, like, Alabama loses, but, like, I don't know if the country comes together. The Patriots, I mean, like,
they don't lose that much though.
I guess when they lost to the Giants in 2012, but like I don't feel like the
The undefeated season though with the Patriots.
That'd have been 07 though.
Yeah, so that was before.
That'd have been, and I even honestly think some people are probably rooting for greatness at that point.
Because it hadn't been done.
Yeah, just like there had never been a 19-0 season. Like the Dolphins, you know, that's in what 72? I mean, yeah, it'd been
72.
It'd been 40 years since you'd had an undefeated season. It's like, I don't know. But like I said, that was 2008 that Super Bowl was. So like that, it would be after the Heat. Are there any other championship teams? I mean, we left at the Warriors and they blew that 3-1 lead, I think.
Yeah, when they had the 73 game.
Yeah.
Regular season win.
But I don't think it was as like unified. Because I think you still had enough people that like didn't like that Cavs team and didn't like LeBron. There's enough Jordan fans and LeBron haters that didn't want to see that happen. And like Curry fans.
I wanted to see him win that.
Just, you wanted to see the Cavs win or the Warriors win?
The Warriors.
Oh, really?
Just because they would have had a better season than
the Bulls?
Jordan, yeah.
I mean, who were the Bulls fans rooting for then? Who are the Jordan fans rooting for? Are they rooting for their 96 Bulls to be unseated, or are they rooting for LeBron? Like, hey, we'll give him that third ring. He's still halfway there. Like, it's fine. But then some people say that LeBron ring was the best ring of all time,
yep.
Beating a 73-win team, coming back from 3-1. Now there's more people saying this one. If you win a ring, if LeBron wins a ring this year, this fourth ring might be worth three rings when you consider, like, it's in a pandemic. You got all the social unrest going. You got like a 3-month camping trip down in Orlando. Like the adversity, no team will have ever won a championship that is better than his two. So like LeBron, really, like if you count that 2016 championship as like 2.5, and this one is like 2.5, he has more rings than Jordan if he wins this one. Wow. When you think about it that way, huh? Really makes you think. The best two championships of all time. Now there is that like asterisk kind of hanging around this Tyler Hero performance of like, could you have done that in front of crowd?
Yeah.
With people in the stands. Now granted, game four would have been in Miami.
Would have been in Miami, yes.
And I think Hero is one of those guys that feeds off the crowd, so I do think he would have done just as well. But would he have been as good through the entire playoffs if he had to like do this in Boston and the new school Godden was rocking?
Godden. I don't think he would have opened up 2-0 in the series in Boston.
And I don't think they probably would have opened up 2-0 in Milwaukee either.
Yeah.
So like they have benefited from that. But at the same time, Murphy and O'Leary and Sully, they might have been rooting for Hero last night if it was in Boston. They might have had to just give a standing ovation to the best white basketball player since John Stockton. John Stockton.
You know, he's the first player to play in the conference finals that was born in the 2000s.
I mean, that checks out. Morning. That checks out.
Jeez, that's kind of crazy.
That's...
I mean, as a 20-year-old, that checks out. And, like, I guess the other young players in the series, I mean, Grant, is he not? Grant's, no, he was a 3-year player, so yeah, he'd be 21, 22. Nunn's, like, 23. He'd take the long way to being a rookie because he beat, allegedly, his girlfriend up while out of Illinois.
Close. Allegedly.
Allegedly. I said allegedly. I don't know what happened.
Just it's in the past now.
I just know what the allegations are. I don't think you have to defend him anymore. You can get rid of Nunn. You got Dragic and you got Hero. You don't need Kendrick Nunn anymore. Last night was fun, though. Unless you were a Celtics fan, then you're probably sick. But this Heat team's fun. And Miami versus LeBron will be pretty good. Pat Riley versus LeBron will be pretty good. Jimmy Butler versus LeBron. Let's go to break. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio. Back on the program, live from the White Claw Studios, pick you up some White Claw. They have 8 delicious flavors to choose from. I'm a black cherry guy. You can try all 8 of them, though, and tell me which ones are your favorite. Support the people who support us. We appreciate White Claw for their support. Please drink responsibly. Ditch the beer belly bloat. Only 100 calories. Drink some White Claw during the Vols game on Saturday.
Ooh.
2 days away.
It's coming.
2 days away. Some COVID rumors out there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, about Tennessee maybe being without a starter or two.
Uh-oh.
If there's one position group you feel the best about right now, and I'll say right now because I think if I'd asked you this when we thought we had Cade Mays, the offensive line would have been the position group you feel the best about. But as of right now, which position group do you feel the best about?
Secondary.
Secondary?
Yep.
Draven shaking his head yes.
I think I would still feel good about the offensive line.
Okay.
I also think secondary and probably running back are up there for me as well.
See, running back I'm a little nervous about because just...
We only have two now.
As we looked at it, yeah, we only have two.
Yeah, but I trust those two.
No, those two are good.
I trust those two to get it done.
Those two are good. I wonder on whether or not it will ever become an issue.
Yeah.
The lack of depth and the lack of experience depth. Like, running back's not really a position you need experience in, right? Like, just hold the ball. Don't fumble.
Yeah.
The only way you can, like, mess up as a running back where it's noticeably bad is if you're in there fumbling, right?
Yeah, because you either have, like, the ball-carrying vision or you don't. Like, you do learn it, you know, the older you get. Especially, you know, going from high school to SEC, it's going to be completely different.
Yeah.
But it's also one of those things that's a lot of good running backs is almost just, like, comes naturally to you.
Yeah.
Like
running back seems like to be the easiest position as a freshman to be good at.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say if you have the vision, now like you said, sometimes you have to develop and you get better at it, but I don't know of how many instances where there's been where you've seen a running back be bad at that and then be good.
Yeah.
While in college.
Yeah. There's only so much you can improve of it. I think,
I feel like you either have it and you've developed it and the game just slows down for you in other ways that it doesn't for other people. And you can come in as a freshman and be good, or you're just going to be a guy that can run hard, and if the holes are open, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
But, like, you can tell you're not, like, a good running back, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, is that unfair to say? Like, I feel like you kind of are who you are, even as a freshman. Like I said, you can get bigger, you can get better at pass blocking. Like, that'll be a big issue for young running backs. Like, even, like, rookies in the NFL, like, it takes some time for them to get up to that level where the pass rushers and the blitzers are bigger and stronger, and you have to, you know, figure out how to block them. Like, Eric Gray had to figure that out. Like, he's still having to figure that out. And hopefully in year two, he'll be better at that.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, that is the biggest, I think, learning curve for most running backs is pass protection.
But in terms of, like, hey, come run the ball, the only way you could really notice that a running back doesn't have it is if he's fumbling.
Yeah, yeah. And I think with our offensive line, like, even if you don't have as much faith in them with Cade Mays not possibly being a part of it, I mean, I think it's still going to help the running backs out to have that solid of the offensive line that has that kind of experience. So,
yeah, you would think the offensive line will open the running game up.
Yeah.
Like, that's the hope there, right? I mean, all season long that the running backs have an easy job.
Yeah, and I think, the offensive line makes it easier for them in the long run. Just even if you don't quite have the vision, if there's a big hole there, you'll still find it. And I think our running backs are good enough to take advantage of the little gaps our offensive line can give them. So,
the hope is that the offensive line is making everything easier on offense, making it easier for your running game, and making it easier on your quarterback. Those two things are connected. We talk about how good the play action pass is. Like, if Tennessee is running the ball well, you can make it so much easier on your quarterback. And Garantano can be really good at his job. Now, when I say really good at his job, I don't necessarily even mean be like a really good quarterback. But like what I've said this for a couple of years. What Tennessee wants to do offensively, what Jeremy Pruitt wants to do offensively, and really just like as a coach is control the game on the ground and with his defense. Have a quarterback who can hit open throws. I've never mistaken Jeremy Pruitt for wanting to have an air raid offense. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he wants to throw the ball 40 times a game. I think he wants to be able to run the ball down your throat and stop you on defense. Was it like the 2010 Alabama team that won the national championship, like just with defense and a run game?
Yeah.
Like those early Alabama national championship teams, like that to me, that's Jeremy Pruitt's like wet dream of coaching. Like,
just
have a defense that dominant and an offensive line that dominant and good running backs. And don't make your quarterback do anything other than the occasional 15-yard play-action pass down the field.
Helps when you have a running back like Mark Ingram, too.
Oh, no, it does. But, like, I mean, like, I think Tennessee should have running backs like that. Maybe not, like, the last couple years, but, like, Tennessee's always had good running backs. I mean, or almost always had good running backs. Tennessee's recruiting good running backs now. I mean, like, if you look at Gray, I mean, people feel good about Gray. And people feel good about this Cody Brown kid coming in, too.
Yep.
Right? I mean, people think that he is going to be a really good running back here. If he ends up making it to campus, like, I mean, I don't think there's any worries that he won't. But, I mean, you don't have him signed. He's not here yet. But, I mean, like, in this upcoming class, like, he's a guy you look at and say, you know, you finish up Eric Gray's junior year, this guy will be ready to take over as a sophomore. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the thought process.
Yeah, he's a bigger running back than Eric Gray.
Yeah, no, he is, but he's, I mean.
I think that will work in our offense just as good as Eric Gray with the cutbacks and shiftiness.
Yeah, you don't have to have a small, like, scat back. I mean, not calling Gray a scat back, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a smaller speed guy. Like, you can have just a big guy who's got enough speed.
Yeah.
You don't have to have 80-yard runs. Jerry Pruitt actually likes the 6 or 7 yard runs better because it takes off more time off the clock and gives his defense more rest. So, like, I mean, like, the offensive line, Cam, you're right. It begins and ends there. Like, it can make everything easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you say you still feel good about that. I'm a little bit worried about the depth, but if the running game and the offensive line is good, then maybe it doesn't even matter who is back there because they're all, like, D1 SEC-level players. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't feel like we have anybody out there that's just not like at just an SEC level. Just doesn't belong,
yeah.
Which I guess when we're talking about running back depth and recruiting, we did lose that JUCO running back over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't really talk
about Tyon Evans.
Yeah. People were a little bit surprised by that, huh?
I mean, we have a bunch of running backs already, like, signed, so I guess they just said tell them to hit the road, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, like, people felt good about him, right?
He's a good player. He's a good player.
Was the thought process there that it was a look-around situation because Tennessee is going to be facing a numbers crunch because, like, what I saw was that Tennessee was caught a little blindsided by it, so I didn't know, like, if there's been more come out about that because I guess he is he now supposed to go to South Carolina? Is that what people are saying? I don't know. He's from South Carolina. It says 10 crystal balls all picked to South Carolina, or crystal balls, 5 predictions, all 10 locked South Carolina.
I haven't seen a ton of information about him, but
we're just looking at, like, running back depth and even, like, moving forward next year if Cody Brown, like, you know, the JUCO guys should be a little bit more ready to go physically.
We still have Cody Brown and 2 other guys, if I'm not mistaken, coming in that could play running back.
Yeah, you never know. Like, usually with those athletes, Pruitt will probably put them on the defense side of the ball. Hey, you're a linebacker now, boy. You're a pass rusher. Go get after the quarterback. Go tackle the ball carrier. You'll make more money that way. So you guys go secondary. Cam goes offensive line. The position I have the least amount of worry about is receiver for me personally.
I do like our receivers.
I just think there's so many guys that I feel like are talented enough that, you know, and you play so many more people. Mm-hmm. Like with the running backs, like I said, we have 2 guys you feel good about right now. With the secondary, like you got 2 really good guys at corner, but like if they're not good, then what happens? You know what I mean? Like what happens if Alante and Bryce struggle a little bit? What happens if they get hurt? Do we have any other cornerbacks that we know that we can plug in and play? Or you feel good about?
I mean, Warren Burrell got a lot of experience last year.
He did the first half of the year, but I don't feel like he did the second half of the year.
After Thompson came back, he didn't get as much run.
I was going to say, the first half of the year, people were really raving about him. Second half of the year, I don't remember him playing much.
The other cornerback is Kenneth George.
Right, and I mean...
Eh.
I mean, yeah, he could take a leap. I mean, he could get better. Like, I do agree with the sentiment that, like, the defensive backs will be coached well, and there's going to be some bodies there, and they'll be put in a position to succeed. Like I've said that many times, that the secondary is always going to be coached well while Pruitt and Ansley are here. But I just feel like if Taylor and Bryce aren't good this year or they get hurt, then I got questions about the cornerback position just because I don't know who's going to be there replacing them. With the wide receivers, you're going to play 8 or 9 guys, and like you're going to find people who can catch the ball type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You rotate so much that it's not going to matter as much. And I think Tennessee's got enough bodies there, enough talent there, that position will be good this year.
Yeah, I think receiver is one of the easiest positions just to plug and play.
Sure. I mean, you play it, you can rotate a lot of guys in there. Now, you don't always have to. You can, if you have a good 3 or 4, you can play them more snaps. But if you have a good 3 or 4, that proves my point that the wide receiving position is in good shape.
Yeah.
Apparently the secondary position is the one we got to worry about with the COVID.
Really?
Yeah.
On Saturday, so. I don't know if that matters against South Carolina's passing game.
It's not the cornerbacks, though, right?
No.
That's what I thought.
Safety is what the implication has been.
We don't know for a fact, but like we're just out here. There's implications.
Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two with headlines. Stick with us. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.